Remember, he says he's very, very happy to come here and see everybody here tonight.
Dene talam ngaso rangarang yin kangin bukor dodi shyendo bayo.
Rinpoche's subject matter tonight will be what our own true nature really is. What is our true nature?
Chetan ngaso rangarang yin de zogyu pongbo, tsoru pongbo, ndogyeji pongbo, ndogyeji pongbo, namshiji pongbo de pongbo ngaye rang yin da wore. Dene pongbo ngaye rang yin de la, dene yoktsor sanjeje yoktsor mdawa rinpa mangbo songze
bayo.
Pongbo ngaye nelo kangye
bayo. Generally, what our true nature is when we think about it is we think about the five aggregates, our the form aggregate and the aggregate of feelings, the aggregate of mental discriminations, different discriminations we make between different objects, the aggregate of what are called mental formations, or all the other basically thoughts and emotions that go on in the mind, and finally the aggregate of the consciousness. So that's what we think about when we think about what we are. But the Buddha taught many different ways of thinking about what our true nature really is.
In
the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught that these aggregates which comprise the individual are impermanent, that they are decaying moment by moment, that nothing lasts from one moment to the next. And therefore, he taught that these aggregates were of the nature of suffering. They were of these aggregates that comprise the individual were of the nature of suffering. They are of the nature of suffering precisely because they don't remain. They decay moment by moment. And that's what the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught that our perception of these five aggregates is that we continually think that they are I. We look at these five aggregates and we say, I, me, me. And as a result of that misperception of these five aggregates, we experience suffering. What our situation is like is like if we were having a dream and we didn't know that we were dreaming, and as a result of that we could experience all different kinds of suffering in this dream because we refer to I and me. We have this thought of I and me. What the Buddha's aim for us was with these teachings in the first turning was for us to develop a sense of weariness with samsara, because we learned that these skandhas or these aggregates are just of the nature of suffering. And so we look at them and we feel very weary. We no longer have any hope to gain happiness through that avenue. And so what we do instead is we strive for liberation from the cycle of existence from samsara.
Tene tang kolo ni bata de se na nga zu pompo nga de tene konzo de jichin ten de cho tan je na malan ta wa juma ta wa re ma tho yang ta par ran yin je ma do pa ngo wi ma do pa den bar ma do pa ran yin je ma do pa ngo wi ma do pa song pa.
In the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught that these aggregates are just a mere appearance. They are a mere appearance that appears due to the coming together of many different causes and conditions. And in this way, in being a mere appearance, they are like a dream appearance. They are like an illusion, the appearance of five aggregates in an illusion or a dream. In that sense, they have no essence of their own. They have no substance. They are not real. They do not truly exist. This is what the Buddha taught in the second turning.
Deyam pombo ngaye tambo job denbar madobare. Pombo ngabo te rere ne jo chegle songwa mare, chen chegle cheba mare, jo chen tende chokwa le songwa re. Jujin tende chokwa deyam jujin rere layang Jujin meba sikha ma re. Jujin rere layan jujin thapa gogundo. Thapa thaiwa takye taun na, tene jujin te madrub re. Jujin madrub se na, tene madrub jujin le sungwa se na pungpo rangyang, jo rangyin je madrub se na, debo pungpo yang rangyin je madrub re.
These aggregates do not come from one single cause or one single condition. Rather, they are the result of a vast multitude of causes and conditions which must come together in a very precise way for them to arise. But if we examine each individual cause from amongst this vast array of causes and conditions, we find that also each of these causes does not rely on just one cause, but also on a vast array of causes. And so what this shows is that the aggregates do not truly exist because their causes do not truly exist. Their causes do not truly exist because you cannot find the causes for them either. So as we analyze and try to find where does this all come from, all we find is just more and more causes and conditions. So what this is called is dependent arising. Something dependently arises due to the coming together of causes and conditions, but neither the result nor any of the causes has any substance.
Te yin do ngaran su pumbu ngambo te la rangge shirab yang takpe che na tene che yang mare tama yang mare chikta shirab ji yabo che na chikta tama rang yin le debe se na tene nga su pumbu ngate rang yin je ma do pare.
Also, if we examine these five aggregates with our intelligence, then what we find is they are not of the nature of being one thing, nor are they of the nature of being many one things. So they are not of the nature of being one, nor are they of the nature of being many, and therefore they do not truly exist. In the third turning of the wheel, the Buddha taught that the mind's inherent nature, or what the mind really is radiant clarity. It is radiant clarity that has never been stained. From the very beginning, our minds have actually always been completely pure. and nothing but that. So then what is the reason for us being in this present condition where we have suffering and difficult circumstances? The reason is that we are confused by what are called adventitious stains. Adventitious meaning that these stains are not inherent to the nature of the mind. They are only temporary. They are not part of the mind's basic nature. And when these stains are present, then we are, then what happens is that all kinds of confused appearances appear to us, and this results in suffering and us undergoing difficult circumstances. When we realize that these adventitious or temporary fleeting stains really don't exist at all, when we realize the nature of these adventitious stains, at that point we attain enlightenment. The Buddha taught these teachings in what are called the sutras that teach the Buddha nature. And in short, the meaning or the essence of these sutras is that just as butter pervades milk, just as oil pervades a sesame seed, just as gold, pure gold, pervades gold ore, so is the nature of sentient beings. Whether they are confused or intelligent or whatever they are, every sentient being possesses the Buddha nature as much as any other sentient being. So it is not that some good sentient beings have the Buddha nature and other inferior sentient beings don't have the Buddha nature. Every single sentient being has the Buddha nature in a complete and perfect way. In the text called The Treatise on Buddha Nature by Maitreya, in Tibetan it's called the Gyu Lama, Maitreya composed one verse where he talks about what this essence of every single individual is, this essence called the Buddha Nature. So he wrote in two lines that it's like a precious gem. It's like the sky, it's like water. In the individual has always been free from mental affliction or kleshas. That is the basic nature of the individual. So Rinpoche explains a little bit about what this verse means. It's teaching through example. So for example, you could have a precious gem that is covered by a lot of muck and dirt and grime, but this precious gem can be cleansed of that. The grime can be cleaned off, and then what you have left is a beautiful jewel. Or you can have the sky. The sky can be covered by clouds, but these clouds also can go away, showing that the clouds are not of the essence of what the sky is. The sky is in itself completely pure. Or water. Water, no matter how dirty it might get, the essence of the water never changes. The water is always completely pure, and the pollution in the water can be removed, leaving the water in its pure, pristine state. So this is like the nature of the individual, because there are these adventitious, these fleeting stains of mental afflictions, kleshas, they're also called, of the accumulation of negative actions or karma, of suffering. But these are not inherent to what the basic nature of the individual is, because the basic nature of the individual is completely pure. It's the Buddha nature, just like these three examples. So the basic nature of the mind is radiant clarity, and all stains are merely temporary. Therefore, practicing on the path is a suitable thing to do, because these stains can be cleared away. They are not permanent. They can be cleared away, and the mind's radiant clarity can shine. If we have confidence that we can, in fact, clear away these stains, which are only temporary, then clearing them away will be much easier. If, however, we take these stains to be truly existent, to have some solidity to them, which they don't really possess, then it will be difficult for us to be free of them. So the worst of all of these stains is suffering. That's the one that bothers us the most. But this suffering is just like suffering in a dream. It's completely fleeting in its nature. It has no essence to it. And once we understand that, then it will be very easy for us to cleanse ourselves of it, to remove it. So in order to remove these stains, we have to rely on the proper antidote, the proper remedy. And what this remedy is discussed in the next two lines of this verse. The remedy has four parts. So the verse, the last two lines of the verse read, commitment to the Dharma, superior intelligence, meditative samadhi, and compassionate love. So these four things, commitment to the Dharma of the Mahayana, or the Great Vehicle, superior intelligence, Samadhi, meditation, and compassionate love, these four comprise the remedy which removes all of the fleeting stains.
So
in order for us to, the first one is interest in or commitment to the Dharma of the great vehicle of the Mahayana. So if we're going to have that type of interest and commitment, then we need to know what the Dharma of the great vehicle is, of the Mahayana. So what this is basically is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta has two parts. One of it deals with sort of the superficial level of appearances that we see, dualistic appearances, and what appears to us are sentient beings. So we develop loving kindness and compassion for them. The bodhicitta, or the awakening mind of loving kindness and compassion for others. That's one part of it. The other part of it is to develop in ourselves an understanding of genuine reality, which is emptiness. And what understands this emptiness is called our prajna, or our intelligence. So we need to look at the great vehicle teachings, which are composed of, on the one hand, developing loving kindness and compassion, on the other hand, developing our intelligence, which understands the nature of reality, and decide, is this something good or not? If it's something good, if we decide that, then naturally we will develop interest in it and commitment to it.
Then lo jong tun de ma se re chara so ko yo do lo jong tun de man de tik pa chen bi chue jin nyam ni de ba re ti che cho de kun zo san ju sen jin nyam ni de je ba song ba re dan da san ju sen ton ni jin nyam ni de do de ba song ba re de ne te yang ni yang do lo na ya bo
So we're probably all familiar with a text called The 7 Points of Mind Training. And this is a very good text because it discusses how to train the mind in both aspects of bodhicitta, the aspect of the understanding of genuine reality, and also the aspect of developing loving kindness and compassion. And this text is mostly about the latter one. It's mostly about developing loving kindness and compassion. There's a very short section at the beginning on developing the bodhicitta, which basically is comprised of understanding the genuine nature of reality. There's also a text called The 37 Practices of the Bodhisattva. And in this text, it talks about what a bodhisattva does. Someone who's practicing the Mahayana, the Great Vehicle, correctly, what is their conduct like? What is their view like? What is their attitude like? So if we read texts like this and we say, oh, that sounds like a good idea, I'd like to do something like that, then we have the first cause of enlightenment, which is interest in the great vehicle.
Then lali sodoi mate thomi ngorcho thomi chile la ma ji ka sam bare ngorcho thomi de tambo pugu chung chung ka kap so ne nyin ji chen bo yo bare te kon gun che nam rang bo yo ka so la pa sa bo yo ka so te ne se lan ro ko rang ka ku ku me ba se ne che ru ma la lo yo re chu ku ka ba se de semje ma bon cha ka le ka bon do nge ka byo se tene ro de chu ma chang ye ro ba chu ma chang lang ka byo ba re tene kong tang bu ge chung chung de ne ning ge chen bo te ning ge chen bo ye ba te che wa nga ma ning ge ku mi ba ta te go me na lam sa bu ge chig le ning ge ten da wo yo ma re tene kong tene pe ning ge chen bo chen je ba re kong ge ta ba re
The text called The 37 Practices of the Bodhisattva was written by a man named Muchu Togme. And Muchu Togme had great compassion even as a very young child. One day in the winter time, he went out and he came back to his parents' home completely naked. So his parents asked him, "What happened to your clothes?" So he said, "Well, there were some cold beings out there, so I gave them my clothes." So his parents went outside and they found his clothes sitting on top of an anthill. And he had put his clothes on top of this anthill to keep the ants warm because he thought they were very cold in the wintertime. And so this shows that he had cultivated compassion in previous lifetimes. It's a sign of that, because otherwise there'd be no reason for a child so young to have such great compassion. So this man was, this extraordinary individual was the author of this text called The 37 Practices of the Bodhisattva.
Hirapteta, tene dameba tope hirapta, tombani tope hirabre, tadangome, colo parpes, the cabs of heba nagi, chutamje rang yinje madoba, chutamje, mulam tavo, chutata, and jaton tabimba, hikore.
The wisdom that realizes selflessness, or prajna, intelligence that realizes selflessness, is the second half of this equation. And this is what this means is to understand things as it is described by the Buddha in the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, that phenomena have no substantial essence. They have no truly existent nature to them. So then what are they? They are just like appearances in dreams. They are like the moon's reflection on a pool of water. They are like rainbows. That is the nature of phenomena. If we think about a dream, what experience is like in a dream, then understanding this about what the true nature of phenomena is will be easy for us.
So
then the third of these causes is samadhi, or meditative stabilization, to have a stable meditation. The reason why we need this is that as long as we still have a lot of confused appearances, what happens is that our mind becomes distracted, moves out towards these confused appearances, becomes engaged with them, and becomes further and further confused. So we need to develop a practice of meditation by which we can rest the mind one-pointedly, and therefore its tendency to be distracted towards outer objects and more confused by them will decrease.
Tene chonanga davate longa yobe chonanga davate longa yode pe kapso yabuta tu mare. Long me ba longa moyo ba ne na yabuta tu re. Te yin do nga so nam do manda ba na so ba meden gudin masam ko sam sam na se ne lo la khirab je taya kale khabo re. Then da wo ma sam ba sem ram up to ne na sem je ne lo la khirab je taya le la wo cha. This is nothing.
So it's like if we're looking at the moon on a pool of water, if there's a lot of wind, then the waves become very choppy and it's difficult to see the moon. But if the wind dies down and the water becomes very still, then we can see the moon very, very clearly. And it's like that with our mind. The expression in Tibetan is that normally we're either thinking of 9 things at once or we forget everything we're supposed to remember. So that's the way our minds are. They're either completely confused by a flurry of all different kinds of thoughts at once, or we just are spaced out. And so this is our normal condition. What we want to do is stabilize our mind in a state of clarity, And at that point, we can see what our mind's true nature really is. Once we stabilize the mind, or literally just let it relax, let it rest in its own true nature, when we let the mind rest in that way, then there are many different techniques of how to look at what the true nature of mind really is. When the mind rests in its true nature, what we then must do is have our mind look at our mind. So because this is the case, because it is mind looking at mind, we have to know the proper method for how to do that. Because if we don't, we won't really be accomplishing much of anything. So the method is very important. So there are many different methods, and the reason why is that for one individual, every method won't be effective. So there are taught many different methods, so that if one method doesn't work for us, then we use the second or the third or the fourth one, and by that we accomplish the goal, which is to be able to have the mind look at its own true nature and rest in that. So then comes loving kindness, compassionate love, and this is composed of two different parts. First, one is just to meditate with the focus on sentient beings. And when we do this, we are thinking about sentient beings and cultivating a mind filled with loving kindness. And then after that, the next part of it is to actually take action involving others and have this action be infused with loving kindness. So what we do is we combine the two kinds of meditation, one on the true nature of mind, the other compassion for others. And when we act, we want to have compassion for others. We want to act out of loving kindness. If we do that, then even if we haven't realized the true nature of the mind, we are our conduct becomes very profound. If our conduct is infused with compassion and love, then our conduct is profound, and it is the conduct of the great vehicle. So this has been a brief presentation of what the essence of the Buddha nature is, and then what the four causes for bringing about this Buddha nature are. So now Rinpoche asks, if people have questions about this, then please ask.
Anyone who would like to ask a question, we appreciate it.
Just so people can see.
Is that it?
things appearing, seeming like rainbows. I'd like to hear more about that. Because it seems pretty solid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These things being solid. So I'd like to hear more about the rainbow theory.
So that's true. It's very true that objects appear to us to be solid, to have a material, substantial existence. But the best example for how that's really not the case, how things are really not as they appear, is a dream. Because in a dream, we can experience all different kinds of things that appear to have the same type of solidity, same quality of being real and substantial. Like we can experience the earth in a dream. We can experience a rock mountain in a dream. And these dream appearances seem to have some substantial existence. But obviously, they don't. So what it is that gives them this existence is not anything inherent in the object, the dream object itself. It's our own thoughts. It's our thoughts that impute or impose onto these objects a quality which they do not possess, which is the quality of substantial existence. What these objects really are appearance and emptiness, undifferentiable from each other, inseparable from each other, meaning that the appearance as something substantive and hard and real is inseparable from the object really being empty of those qualities, not really having those qualities. And it's just like in a dream. And what about all the sentient beings who we come into contact with, including ourselves? Well, we're all just like water moons. We're just like the moons that appear on the surface of water. These water moons appear to move back and forth and do all different kinds of things. But really, these water moons aren't doing anything because there's really no moon then.
Just a mere reflection.
The protector Nagarjuna said that if we can understand how it is that all outer appearances are just like a water moon, then we will be free of any type of wrong view. We'll be free of wrong views because we won't take things to be real. On the other hand, we'll also be free of the wrong view of saying everything is false, because while it's true that things are not real, it's also true that their falsity is not something truly existent. Because if falsity were something that really existed, then the falsity would become real. The falsity would become true. And that's not how it is. The true nature of appearances transcends both truth and falsity. They are just like water moons.
Tene namkha lan tha da we me ba ta sa gon la teng da wo me ba ti chu da ta bi ba ta re.
La sa.
Dan da sa gon la teng da wo ngne me ba ti sar pu do ga.
La sa. Re. Sa pu re.
Re.
So Rinpoche says that the fact that if we think about space, space has no center, has no boundary to it. If we think about this planet really doesn't have any direction. You can't ever say you're on the top of the planet or you're on the bottom of the planet. So this shows how it is, these are examples of how it is that phenomena are really just water moons.
Teta sagona tenwo minaya namdo latu de tenwo yopare mato simchinsu rang tenle yo sambare mato wo lo yo sambare namdo che tuwe yo. Te rang ka namdo latu ne rang tenle yo. Rang ka namdo la rale pare.
So really there's no such thing as up or down on this planet, but sentient beings impute or impose the existence of up and down where there really isn't any. Because everybody thinks they're on the top of the planet. Not one person in the world thinks they're on the bottom of it, that they're upside down. Everybody thinks they're right side up. Nobody thinks they're upside down. So no matter where you are on the planet, you always think you're right side up. And so therefore, there really is no right side up and upside down. How could there be? So this is just some idea that we impose onto reality where it doesn't really exist.
Tene kase rang wo yin ban nam do ngne che ba yin na tene che bo yesa ma re ma ra ba go byu do de re rang chi bo yong sa ma re te che ge me bre da.
So if anybody ever did have the idea they were upside down, they would be very uncomfortable because they think they were upside down, and so therefore this thought never arises to anybody that they're standing upside down.
Also
on this planet, there's no one common time. If you want to know what time it is, everybody will give you a different
answer.
So there are many stages, progressive stages to the meditation, the cultivation of the view that phenomena are really of the nature of rainbows, of the nature of water moons, and especially in the Vajrayana, there are pith instructions which teach how to meditate and cultivate the actual experience of phenomena as having that type of quality. But it's not easy to gain certainty in these instructions so quickly because they're incredibly profound. And so, therefore, they are taught in stages. So the protector Nagarjuna wrote one text called The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way. And in this text, he composed one verse which goes like this. He said, just like in a dream, just like in an illusion, just like in a city of spirits in the clouds, that's what the appearance of birth is like. That's what the appearance of abiding is like. And that's what the appearance of death is like. They have no more reality than that.
Tene mala repe tenda mala jomata mado pala ninje gomse mala jomata ta ranga mala jomata ver te te mato pesimje la ninje gomse sombare te yang samuyo.
And the king of yogis, Milarepa, sang one short verse where he said, I know this life to be like an illusion and like a dream, and I have compassion for those who do not realize that. So Milarepa was stating his own realization that this life was just an illusion and just like a dream. And then what is the practice of compassion? It's having compassion for those sentient beings who don't know that.
Tene chende mala joma choda tab to na tene ko to ko dam de ban ra o mai ba ko yang pa yang cha ge bre.
When we realize that this life is just like an illusion, like a dream, like a water moon, then do we become very tense? Do our minds become anxious? No, it's completely the opposite. We develop a natural state of being which is very open and very spacious and very relaxed.
Tene ngo ma trop to pomo chu to du pa yang ko yang zong gor ma bo le te ta ba te che de ja thong ta cho da ta bo to ba le tene tene pa yang gor to so ma le.
So the siddhas, both men and women of the past, sang many songs about how blissful their experience was of realization. But if we want to know the reason or the essence of these songs, it is that they realized this life's appearances, including themselves, to be just like a rainbow, to be just like a water moon. And as a result of that, they were very open and very spacious and very relaxed. So it's like that. Other questions?
Yeah. Hello, Rinpoche. How do you help people who don't realize their confusion when and don't want help? Like, sometimes I feel deep compassion for their suffering, but I also feel that I'm imposing on them, and I don't want to do that.
Krishna Murangi Semchen Ditsala Miditsala Ninja Yenayan Dene Konso La Ropa Kandas Che Hakogimindu.
Re Ta Konso Tendavo Choda Jason Tavo Yinaya Tetar Mato Pa Denbari Kemba Tendavo Hindu Yang Mebe Sena Dene Ninja Gom. Ninja Gom De Dene Rang Tesol Semchen Nam La Ropa Sepe Malam Tab Kondo. Malam Tab Na Malan je top je te ne re be maung bala yin la rokpa se re. Sem je rokpa se ba te tanda lam sang zo to ya usuk ya kumu do. Te ne tse ye me da je ba sema to la malan je top je rokpa zo re.
So there are some people who really don't want our help. They don't realize these life's appearances to be like dreams and illusions. They don't really have any interest in knowing that. This particular time, they're not open to help. And so for these people, what we need to do is to meditate on compassion for them. We need to cultivate the attitude of compassion for them. We also need to make aspiration prayers that in the future we will be able to help them. And then if we make aspiration prayers like that, then in the future we actually will be able to help them. Rinpoche says there's no need for us to insist or to be too much in the way of pushing to help anybody. Rather, we just need to make aspiration prayers that we will be able to help them in the future, and then we will, in fact, develop that ability.
Tene semjin kahi donga chenje senjin mangbon thong na yang roba zondo yo mare zo samba yo mare zondo mevate jeva ngama tene nyingje dang nyingje mago mula mata betop jere kahi tene Dunga chen la rokpa zondu yopa, zoya la gabo yopa. Tene semchen mangpo la rokpa, dunga chen mangpo la rokpa zotapa te, tene cheba ngama nyingi gomba tang, mulan tapa tare. Rokpa zondu yopa tang, yang zotapa mangpo yopa. Semchen cheba mangpo tongkoduwa.
So some people can walk by a bunch of people who are suffering, beings who are suffering, and they just walk by. They have no interest whatsoever in helping anyone. even if they're suffering, they just go on their way. And Rinpoche says that this is a sign of the fact that they never really cultivated compassion in previous lifetimes. So they have no basis for it arising now. On the other hand, other people see beings suffering and they want to help them. And not only do they want to help them, but they are actually able to do some benefit for others. And this is a sign that in the past they made these types of aspiration prayers where they aspired to be of help to others and they prayed that they would be in the future, and now in fact they are. So this is the fruition of these aspiration prayers that we are seeing in their present ability to actually be of benefit. So we can look at these people who are actually being of benefit to others, and we can think to ourselves, oh, this person has a lot of compassion for others, and they're also being of great benefit to others. This is a sign that in the past they made aspiration prayers that they could be like that. And so now I too make that similar type of aspiration prayer, and I hope that I myself in the future, like these people are benefiting others now, will be able to benefit others in the future. And by doing like that, then in the future we will develop the same ability that the people we see have. We will be able to help others. So basically what compassion is about is developing the desire to help others and not really caring what happens to you in the process. So we lose the selfish thought, selfish attitude, and we have this love for others. And this is compassion according to the Mahayana, the great vehicle. That's what it's about.
So
as long as we still have sort of a selfish quality of thought, then it will be difficult for us to perform much benefit for others. We might do a little bit, but our selfishness is always going to get in the way eventually. On the other hand, if we don't really have a thought of our own well-being, then we'll be able to perform great benefit for others. And so this is what we want to slowly begin to cultivate, is the attitude of loving kindness that doesn't worry so much about ourselves and thinks more about the other beings. And this is what these seven points of mind training are about, is beginning to be able to develop that type of mind
frame.
It's very difficult for us as beginners to actually do what's called exchanging self for other. So it's very difficult for us to do that. So what we are instructed to do is to begin to train our minds in that type of process. And the way we train our minds in that type of process is by practicing what's called tonglen, or taking and sending. So what we do is, when we breathe out all of our happiness and all of our virtue, and we send that out to all other sentient beings. And when we breathe in, we take in all of their negativity, all of their suffering, we take on ourselves, in exchange for giving them all of our happiness and virtue, positive actions. And so that's how we begin to train the mind in something which is too difficult for us to actually attempt to do actually right away.
Tene mekpe gone ten rawo yang ni yam to kom na sem kom pa top je. Tene ngwe so da yin je to pa. Rang ken go da yin la mek tang khan ma la so pa. Kya tha yin la pa tang to pa. Ten rawo cha ge yo.
And if we practice like this, then eventually we will in fact be able to exchange ourselves for others. We'll be able to offer others our head, or our eyes, or our limbs, our flesh and blood, whatever they need, we'll be able to offer it to them without an ounce of regret. So nowadays we can see that in the hospitals there are organ donors, there are kidney donors, there are people who give their eyes so that others might have sight. And Rumiji says that all of this is incredibly wonderful. And in the great vehicle, the people who do like that are called bodhisattvas, because they are called adamantine beings. And they are the ones who are really practicing this loving kindness and compassion in a real way, not just in their minds. So the Buddha, when the Buddha was a bodhisattva, many past lifetimes trained in giving of his body, the limbs and the flesh and the blood of his body, not only once, but many, countless times. And also sometimes he was born as an animal, like as a fish or a rabbit or a turtle. And at these times when he took birth like that, he also gave of his own flesh and blood to others.
Tene jarpu pomo yihitawa dawala jewala makapsa samba te ninji gom. Tene samba ninji top de nyama rere yen de simjin padu me betonse. Tene maumbala simjin jitonse pa malam tabala tende. Tanda yang tene tropa naso pagoni simjin jitonse taba tenda wosu. Tisena malam tamna tene neba chere chere dore. Lamsang kyok chimboma zoma tumnaya. Sembangu.
So there's Rumiji also tells the story of Tara, the noble Tara, who when she was a princess named Yeshe Dawa, or Wisdom of the Moon, she made many aspiration prayers that in the future she would be able to benefit other sentient beings. She prayed a lot. She cultivated loving kindness and compassion. She prayed a lot that in the future she would gain the ability to protect others from fear and danger. And in fact, she gained that ability. She gained that power. And so what this shows us is the importance of making these types of aspiration prayers, Rinpoche says. And it's certainly not the case that we should get discouraged just because we can't help others so much now. We should not get discouraged like that, because all we need to do is just make aspiration prayers that in the future we'll be able to help others, and we will be. So really there's no need to get discouraged about anything. So Tara, when she was the princess Yeshe Dawa, also made a very special type of prayer. She prayed that she would, in that present lifetime and in all of her future lifetimes, help sentient beings in the form of being a woman. So she would always take birth as a woman and help beings in whatever way she possibly could. That was her prayer. And even when she attained enlightenment, she would attain enlightenment in a woman's body, not in a man's body. And so as a result of making this aspiration prayer, many, many emanations of Tara have come and have performed incredible benefit for sentient beings in the form of being women while they were helping others. And also, when they all attain enlightenment, they will do so in the form of being a woman. So in Tibetan, there is a way of making both a female and a male way of describing any type of epithet by which you describe somebody. So in English, doesn't always come out that way. But what Rinpoche is saying is that she has all of these names, these epithets for her, like liberator. In Tibetan, you could say drol ma. The ma means that it's a woman, it's feminine. And so she is a great liberator because she liberates beings from their both their temporary fear of being harmed by some danger and also ultimately from samsara. So she is a great liberator, the feminine liberator. She's also called Nyurma. Again, ma means feminine, and Nyur means quickly. So what this literally, what this is referring to is that she helps us to quickly accomplish whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish. And so she is the feminine one who does this, who helps beings to accomplish what they want to. She's also called heroine. So here in English, we have a nice word for it. She is a heroine because she has great bravery and courage and gives others the same. Bravery and courage in facing obstacles. And finally, she is called the mother of the victorious ones because she is the embodiment of the transcendent perfection of wisdom. And that realization of that is what gives rise to the enlightened beings. And so therefore, she is called their mother.
So
in Tibet, there was one particularly famous emanation of Tara called Lapki Drunma. And when she was born, she had a third eye of wisdom that everybody could see. And she developed the practice of what's called chud, or cutting through. And this is a practice which is very unique because it is performed by all four schools, all four lineages of Tibetan Buddhism. Sakya, Kagyu, Geluk, and Nyingma. They all perform this ritual, this practice. It's a type of meditation practice. And so this shows this one particular emanation of Tara's, her great wisdom and her great power.
Lapki
Drunma had several sons and daughters, and they all went on to become great siddhas and to perform incredible benefit for others. And all of this came about mainly because in the past, Tara, the noble Tara, had made aspiration prayers that things like this would happen. So it was as a result of her praying that it would happen, that in the future it did happen. Therefore, it's the case that even if we can't immediately be of benefit to someone, then we just need to make aspiration prayers that in the future we will be of benefit to others, and then in fact in the future we will be. Other questions?
Yeah.
As far as loving kindness is concerned, I think the common predicament is that it's very easy to be loving and kind to people who have not offended us.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as somebody offends you, mm-hmm. then the question of loving kindness is challenged.
Mm-hmm.
How does one address
that? Chupa magana, then a control sagre, then a ninja gom calicabores.
Re,
then a carachena yabre.
Te tabzogre, tambo, rangi, ni, da dola gom. Tele yapo, tele chile lawyere.
Lare.
Tene young parma lagom.
Lasso.
Tene ha lo no zanga simpin lagom. Tene rembe jacerta. Tene jiso dalagum.
Lasso. So Rinpoche says that's true. Exactly what you say, and so therefore there is a method for meditating on compassion, which is a graduated path. And so first we meditate on compassion for our friends and relatives and people who we feel naturally compassion for. So we use that as a basis. Then after we do that, then we practice thinking about compassion with the focus of people who we don't really know, who are just sort of out there, strangers who we don't really have any contact with, and we wouldn't otherwise feel one way about them or the other. So we practice meditating on compassion for strangers. Then we practice sending our compassion out to all sentient beings in all the four directions and even the 10 directions, if you want to think about it in a more greater way. Send out compassion to all sentient beings. And then lastly, cultivate compassion for people who irritate us, who we don't really like so much.
Tenda boye tene rembe komson tene yoma dala nyingi chigre gomso te tene dala nyingi che malam tamna yang chigre.
So if it's difficult to develop compassion in a particular situation for someone whom we have a feeling of not liking them very much, then again, what we should do is make an aspiration prayer. That in the future, even though now I don't feel much compassion for this person, in the future I pray that I will be able to have compassion for someone who irritates me in this way, who someone who I consider them to be my enemy, or they consider me to be their enemy, or whatever the situation is. In the future, may I have compassion for these types of people. So if we pray like that, then even if in the immediate present we don't have a great amount of compassion for them, doesn't matter. Because if as long as we make these types of aspiration prayers sincerely, then in the future we definitely will have compassion for these people. So in the Mahayana, and the Great Vehicle, it's explained that we have to practice on the path for what are called three immeasurable eons, which is the time it takes for the universe to come into being and then be completely destroyed again. So for that long a period of times three, we need to cultivate compassion. And on one path, which is called the path of accumulation of merit, we need to stay on that one path, the beginning path, for one of those eons. And so Rinpoche says, therefore, it's difficult for us to give rise to compassion in every single situation immediately, but we need to prepare for that happening nonetheless. So right now, we're in a state where our compassion is not perfect and our wisdom is not perfect. But when our wisdom and compassion become perfect, that's enlightenment. So that's what enlightenment is. It's nothing other than the perfection of wisdom and the perfection of compassion. So until then, we keep working on it. It's like that.
Ta 9 o'clock, should we wrap it up? Ta tsana,
yeah. Ta try the tracking jig thing when I'm the check down
there. Lama,
Lama.
Tata Lamsang, then I am.
Tata Lama.
Lama. So now Rinpoche asks if we sing the song which he has composed called Auspiciousness That Lights Up the Universe. It's a prayer that this universe become a good place for everyone. So I'll sing the first verse and then we can all start over again together. You see that everything in samsara and nirvana is merely dependently arisen. You see the dharmata, the true being, that is the essence of all dependent arising. The power of your great insight fills the universe with auspicious light. O mighty Shepa Doje, please rise up now from within my heart. Okay? Namo Guru Hasa Vajraye. You see that everything in samsara and nirvana is merely dependently arisen. You see the dharmata, the true being, that is the essence of all dependent arising. The power of your great insight fills the universe with auspicious light. O mighty Shepa Doje, please rise up now from within my heart. Ground's basic nature transcends conceptuality, and like water moons, appearances arise dependently. May everyone realize that this is true and dispel the darkness cast by doubt and wrong view. And may their realization's auspiciousness light up the whole universe. The vision of your wisdom is amazing. You see just how things are, you see everything. As parents love their children, so you love all beings. You bring us benefit and happiness. Your power makes disciples out of your enemies. May your auspiciousness light up the universe. For samsara's cause clinging to I and me, the Dharma realizing selflessness is the greatest remedy. May all beings use it to pacify their confused belief that there is an I. And by the power of this great happening, may auspiciousness light up the universe. The ways of ordinary beings you have left behind. Noble ones who realize reality, the true nature of mind, may you lead all ordinary beings who have not yet entered to the path of peace, and by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. May the Yidams who bestow the cities and the protectors who clear obstacles away eliminate all harmful conditions, everything adverse to the path, and by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. May the noble path of nonviolence flourish in all the worlds thereof. When beings meet and interact, may the connections they make be filled with love, and by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. At the twilight of this century, in one of such prosperity, may struggle over wealth and gain disappear and not be seen again. Free from strife and violence, may all enjoy great abundance, and by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. This has been a century when science has advanced incredibly, Amazing and wondrous these new machines that have brought the gods' enjoyments to human beings. May they be used with skill supreme to end violence and cause peace to reign. And by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. May the sciences that explore outside be joined with the inner science of the mind to excellently put an end to mistaken views and confusion. And by this may auspiciousness light up the whole universe. The source of all this auspiciousness is the true nature of mind so luminous. So may realization of mind just as it is set the universe ablaze with auspicious excellence. Through all of this auspiciousness, wherever its light may be seen, with the love and the compassion that make bodhicitta mind supreme, may this thought arise in everyone. Other beings' happiness is as important as my own, and may excellent virtue and auspiciousness always increase, never diminish.
Tanghazo.
So now we'll meditate a little bit on compassion.